It's time for Hamilton County Goes to the Movies. This is a weekly podcast featuring Adam Awson, a writer for the weekly publication Current in Carmel. You can read his work at currentincarmel.com. My name is Larry Lannon. I write the local news blog from Carmel's neighbor to the east, Fishers, Indiana, larryinfishers.com. This week, Adam and I review the film Kingsman: The Golden Circle. In our interview segment, we welcome Ron Hahn, manager of Flick's Brewhouse in Carmel, and Victor Talavera from the Flick's Brewhouse corporate headquarters in Austin, Texas. Let's get started. Welcome to Hamilton County Goes to the Movies. I counted, and this is our 15th episode, so we're just over 3 months into this
endeavor. The learner's permit episode.
Say again?
It's the learner's permit.
The learner's permit. Okay, we're off the training wheels now. But we're trying to figure this thing out after more than 3 months, and I counted up the listens. We're slowly building an audience. We appreciate everybody who listens, every single one of our listeners we appreciate very much. But I just wanted to let you all know that we plan on continuing this, and we always welcome your comments. We're on social media, and please let your friends know on social media if you like our podcast. We just do this. It's a labor of love for Adam and I so far. So, Adam, we've both seen the same film for this week, but you have been a busy moviegoer this week.
Oh, yeah. So this week we're going to review Kingsman Golden Circle, a sequel to the Matthew Vaughn's kind of spy thriller. But then I also caught up on some films that kind of came out while I was gone, being It, the Stephen King adaptation that I read the kind of entire 1,200-page book on the long international flights to and from Italy.
Want to review the book while you're at it?
The book has some weird things in it that I'm glad weren't put in the movie. Anyone who's read the book, there's some parts where Stephen King kind of goes off the rails, and he's almost apologized for some of his passages involving, you know, sexual things in children that, thankfully, I'll just spoil it, are not in this movie.
Well, I think it's rather well known now.
So. Yeah, and then I also saw Mother with an exclamation point. And I'll talk about that in a sec. But that is, Mother is, it's hard to describe that film. Did you want to review either of these before?
Well, let's hold that for a moment.
Okay.
We'll do Kingsman.
I'll come back and talk about
those. We'll talk about those two films, and then we have a little closing discussion we're going to have.
All right, sounds good.
Directly related to film. But we're going to start off with Kingsman, The Golden Circle. Now, I guess, I don't know if it was good or bad, I did not see the first Kingsman film. So I came in not knowing that, although you pick up a lot of the first film in the second film. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I missed a great deal. As I understand it, in the previous film, the world was saved by the Kingsman group. In this particular film, it starts off with the headquarters of Kingsman being destroyed. Nearly everybody dies except a few, and they hook up with a group of people in the United States called the Statesman, which instead of being a clothing store or something along those lines, is a whiskey company in Kentucky, of all things. That's their cover. And so they hook up with what they call their cousins in the United States. And they try to figure out who was trying to do them in. And that goes to a new story of an effort to basically take over the world by the evil Poppy Adams, played by Julianne Moore. Colin Firth, I don't think I'm giving too much away. Colin Firth is back. If you saw the first film, he died. But hey, in science fiction and soap operas, people come back to life all the time.
He was in the trailer for the movie, and so, which since just kind of gave it away.
And it was not a flashback. I think it was pretty clear there. So, they have Taron Egerton back as Eggsy. They've got Mark Strong as Merlin. I just want to talk a little bit about some of the people who are in the film. Halle Berry is very good in the scenes that she is in. She plays a character called Ginger Ale, but I don't think she gets nearly enough lines. I think she was good in what she did. Here's an interesting twist. Elton John plays himself. He is captured by the evil Poppy Adams, played by Julianne Moore, and it is great comic relief when you see Elton John. He was very funny. I think the director used him well. So I won't go into all the other details. That's just some of the major members of the cast. Eggsy, as I said, one of the survivors of the Kingsman group. He and a couple of other people who have survived try to save the day, save the world, and try to bring Kingsman back as an organization. That's the story. That's the basic. What's your take on the film?
So I saw the original, and I really liked the first film. Matthew Vaughn, the director, he kind of rose to fame doing a couple films. Kick-Ass was probably the first one people remember him from, where it was a teenage-turned-superhero based on a comic book. This is also based on a comic book. And that was very violent, but very stylized, a lot of one-liners and humor. And he didn't go on to do the sequel for Kick-Ass. Instead, he went to do X-Men First Class, kind of rebooting that franchise with Jennifer Lawrence just a few months before Hunger Games came out, kind of pre-Hunger Games. X-Men First Class was great, stylized X-Men movie with great actors such as James McAvoy, Michael Fassbender. The sequels haven't been as good. He didn't do them. He came on to do Kingsman, and it's kind of the same thing you would expect from Kick-Ass. But more of a James Bond backdrop. A lot of stylized action sequences, catchy, kind of a, you know, quick one-liners that are really funny and kind of likable actors in the roles. Samuel L. Jackson played the bad guy in the first movie, and Colin Firth had a much more prominent role as Galahad, the agent who was introducing Eggsy into the world of the Kingsmen. And it was a great casting at the time because Colin Firth had been known for, you know, doing stuff like dry British dramas.
Playing the king, for instance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You don't think of him as an action star, but he was perfect in the role. And there, in the first film, there was a memorable fight sequence in a bar that kind of kicked it off that they try to replicate in this film. This is probably the first time he's taken over his own sequel. So expectations were high. You think, okay, I like the first one. Will I like the second one? The answer is, yeah, you'll probably like it, but maybe not love it as much as the first, which is to be expected of most sequels. There's a lot of problems that go on in the second movie. For one, Colin Firth does reappear. He was miraculously saved by the Statesman. I don't want to give it away, but he's not dead. It was in the trailer for the movie. But he has memory loss, and as a result, he's not his usual character until most of the movie is over with.
About halfway through. Yeah.
Yeah. So you kind of miss out on what was some of the best parts of the first movie, which were Colin Firth being a spy. The length of this film is way too long. It clocks in at 2 hours and 20 minutes. I understand that for some action movies, if it's maybe based on a book where you have a lot of material you have to put in, or maybe if it's a historical adaptation or a big epic like Gladiator, I understand there's a lot of story to tell. This film, I don't know, by the end, I felt like we saw action scene after action scene. I was burnt out. I can't stay on the edge of my seat for 2.5 hours, basically. And so it really needed to be trimmed a little bit. I thought some of the better actors in this film, such as Jeff Bridges, Channing Tatum, and Halle Berry, were all somewhat wasted. They didn't do a bad job, but they weren't given enough to do. So really, they show, for the trailer of the movie, look, all these big stars you like that are in this film. Yeah, they're in there. They're not really doing much, but they're in there. But the film still has a lot of the things that you like from the first one. It's very stylistic. It's fast-paced. The action sequences are interesting. There are some funny moments in the film. One part of the film I have to bring up, which kind of cringed for me. There's a part in the film, and I don't think this is a big spoiler, but I suppose spoiler alert, where he has to seduce a female agent. And I read an interview where they're kind of defending their choice in this film, saying James Bond would sleep with enemy agents all the time, and it's been something that's been done in these films forever. I get that. This film takes it a bit further, where he has a tracking device and he needs to plant it on her. And they do it in a very sexual way.
A very private way.
Yeah. Yes. In a way, and the way they filmed it, too, I was like, really? Did they need to do that? And not to get political on you, but we were in a day and age where we're told to grab women by their whatnots. Maybe it just, my sensitivity for that was a bit much. I kind of felt like, ah, oh, God, you know. And you know what? I can see some women having some complaints with this film. Halle Berry, the agent, you know, they do talk about how it's sexism that she didn't move up the ranks, but she's also not given a prominent role in this film. And one of the main female agents from the previous movie, she's only in it for a brief period of time.
Well, because the script called for that. So how would you sum this movie up?
Not terrible, not as good as the first one. Maybe 3 out of 5 stars.
Well, I'm going to give it a D+. And it's just below a C. And I have to tell you, I, again, did not have the ability to go back to the first film. Basing films on comic book characters can work very well, unless the story looks like a comic book story. This was a comic book story. It was not a film story, in my view. There were a lot of flaws. You've already brought up some of them. The misuse of Halle Berry. Channing Tatum was in it, but he wasn't used very well. His character wasn't in it. He was an important character, but he was in and out of the film. Bringing Colin Firth back, you know, okay, that's a science fiction secret agent type thing to do. But I just feel the story wasn't very compelling. Another thing, I think they actually did some creative technical things in terms of how they shot the fight scenes. They were trying to follow one of the characters as they tumble and they turn around. I thought that was a little creative, so I'll give them credit for that. That's one reason I even gave it a D+. I think there were some efforts to make the film look good in terms of its special effects in that respect. But again, I would agree with you. It's a great waste of talent. It's a film that had a lot of promise. I looked at who's in it. I've looked at some of the acting talent in it. I looked at the history of Matthew Vaughn and his directing career. I guess I expected more here. So I got to give it a D+, and I do so reluctantly. You know, I don't like to do that. You know, some people think critics love tearing films apart. I've never been that way. I always enjoy, if I can build a film up, I like it much better. But when you've got a film that you were hoping, pulling for it, wanting it to be good, and you watch it, and it's like, oh my, and I had to look at my watch when I left the theater. I said, is it really 2.5 hours or more later than that? And I thought, this is a long film.
It was
much, much longer.
It felt like it was directed by a teenage boy.
Yeah, it's a comic book. It was written by somebody who would write a comic book for teenage kids. When I was a teenage kid, I used to read comic books, and I used to love these kind of stories. It's not a good film script. So I have to go say, I think it's a little bit below average. If you really love the genre, if you adored the first film, okay, go see it, but prepare to be disappointed. If you don't know much about King's Man, you might want to skip this film.
There's a kind of a disappointment because if you saw the first one, they created a world that was worth revisiting. So they basically said, here was this young kid who was recruited to be in the spy agency that was not a part of the government. It was its own funding, and it's kind of its own secret thing. Their whole thing was, you know, manners make the man, you know, classiness, you know, well-dressed, you know, kind of that cool stylistic thing. And then you had, you know, action sequences that were gruesome but not overly bloody. It wasn't over the top. Samuel Jackson, you know, he can take a bad part and chew some scenery. I thought Julianne Moore did her best, but
didn't have much to work with.
I don't
with,
think her character
she?
Was well written. I don't think the
there were some gruesome scenes featuring with her.
Yeah. But I mean, it was no fault of her own. Actually, I don't think any actor in this film is to blame for this movie. I think they all did a fine job. I actually still think the main character has some promise for other roles. Actually, I also mentioned this. Taron Egerton, you won't even recognize him, but if you saw Eddie the Eagle Mm-hmm. He's the main character in that movie, looks completely different. He's kind of playing a nerdy, awkward guy, does a fantastic job in that film. So he's a good actor.
That was Matthew Vaughn directed, too, wasn't
it? Yeah, so Matthew Vaughn is a good director. Mm-hmm. This movie just, his worst impulses were all here. I mean, basically, and even you said the comic book areas, most movies ask you to suspend your disbelief. Mm-hmm. This movie asked you to expel it from school. Like, it was more than suspension in this one.
I can't not disagree with that. So, unfortunately, you're saying it's average at best, maybe a little below. I'd say it's below average.
I didn't expect much. I thought it's going to be a sequel. It's a big Hollywood movie. It'll have some fun action sequences. I didn't think it was going to be very good. And, you know, even then I may have been slightly disappointed. Like I said, Elton John was funny in a few moments.
Yeah.
There were a few characters and a few scenes that I liked. So it wasn't complete garbage, but, you know, wait for DVD. Even if you like the first one, I just say wait, because it's not worth going to theaters to see this.
There are better films in the theater than this, I think, at this moment. Okay, well, you've seen Mother and you've seen It. I'm going to give you I did not see them, so I'm going to give you turn this over to you and let me know what you think.
Oh, It was probably the biggest one that most people have seen. I was really impressed with it. The casting was fantastic. A lot of the kids, one of the kind of standouts was one of the main characters from the Netflix show Stranger Things. He plays the Richie character, which is kind of the smart aleck. But if you've read the book or if you saw the 1990 miniseries, all the characters are right there. It does touch on some themes which are important, which I think elevates it above your traditional horror film, because it does actually have something to say about childhood fears, about abuse, about all sorts of things. So there are some real themes in that. And Stephen King has that in his books. He's a deep writer. He does indulge himself with a little bit too long in some of the lengths. But the movie knew what it was doing. It took out the parts that didn't need to be in there while still capturing the spirit. The special effects were top-notch. The way they did Pennywise the Clown, I mean, Tim Curry is kind of hard to beat, but this guy did pretty well. I mean, the looks were really good. Did it scare me? Did it make me jump? No, but I actually appreciated that, because you had a lot of horror films that are what they call jump scare movies, where they just go, and just kind of make you get spooked because they surprised you.
Some of the early Jason Bourne films would do that.
Yeah, and you know what? Those are kind of cheap. Anyone can make a jump scare movie. To make something that's atmospherically scary, I think, is a little bit better. I think they did a good job at that. And it's something that after I saw it, I was like, I kind of want to re-see that, because I think there's some things I may have missed. So I don't know where I'd rank that. I don't want to give away too many A's, because A's, I kind of like to hold those in my back pocket. So maybe a B+.
Okay.
Not to say this, it wasn't, I really liked it, but I got to hold those A's for when, like, I...
It's a good film, but not the best.
Exactly. Okay. I mean, I kind of have to hold those for later. So that's why I'm not giving it an A, but it was really good. Mother, on the other hand, oh man, I wish we could have a spoiler-free, like just even a spoiler space where we could just talk about Mother and not worry about spoiling it for people. But man, it's hard to talk about that movie. The premise itself is a spoiler. I will say this, not to give anything away. The entire film is metaphorical. It is somewhat disturbing, and it is an art movie in its purest form. I know we talk about artsy movies, films where they take artsy techniques. This is an art movie. How I am surprised that Paramount put this in so many theaters. This was a wide release. If you look on Fandango right now, there's probably a dozen theaters in Indianapolis where you can see this movie. And we all know why, because Jennifer Lawrence is the star. So I am laughing at all the... maybe kind of grandmas who don't like, you know, artsy things, who thought, oh, well, you know, I like Oscar movies, so of course I'll see something a little different. I'll see something a little weird. And they went and saw this, and they probably walked out of the theater saying, what did I just see? But you know what? I really enjoyed it for this one perspective. You know, Larry, you see a lot of art stuff too, so you understand. This film had something to say. Does it have flaws? Absolutely it does. Is it not for everyone? It's probably not for 99% of the people. But it was interesting. It made me think. And it's a film that afterwards you and someone else who might have seen it are going to sit there and talk about it, which I think is a mark of a good film. And the style is really there. I don't know. I kind of liked it, and I know most people wouldn't like it, but I kind of liked it. A fun thing to do is if after you see this movie, someone who doesn't mind spoiling the film, just describe the plot of the movie to them and watch them say, really? That was what the movie was about? And it's kind of fun to see the reaction on their face.
Well, I've heard things about it that probably would be a spoiler, so I'll just leave it at that. I have not seen the film. I may see it maybe when it comes around the second time, but I think there are other films that we can go see. I want to change the subject a little bit. You and I have talked about the terrible summer that the studios are going through and the theater owners are going through. I hadn't really looked at the statistics, but a recent New York Times story, think about the numbers I'm about to give you. From May through Labor Day, that will generally make up 40% of what these studios and theater owners are going to make. 40% of ticket sales are going to occur May to Labor Day. In that period, we now have the figures in, there was a 15% decline from the previous year. Now, people who crunch these numbers say to find a summer this slow, you have to go back 20 years. That's how bad this summer has been. Another statistic, the three largest theater chains in America say they have lost about $4 billion. That's with a B. $4 billion in their market value. So, since May, these companies are worth $4 billion less because they've had a very bad summer. Now, you would think that the movie industry would turn inward, say, why aren't we making better movies? What do we need to do to please the audience? No, they're not doing that. What are they doing? They're blaming Rotten Tomatoes. Rotten Tomatoes. An online operation which just amalgamates all these different reviews. I thought to myself, That's like trying to measure something and you blame the measuring stick. You know, you're not blaming the actual whatever you're measuring. However, this reporter who wrote this story for the New York Times that I'm quoting said if you get these studio executives to talk to you privately, they admit they had a bad quality year. And they also say, and I don't know about this, but some are saying privately to these reporters who cover this, that Netflix and Amazon are really beginning to make inroads into the movie theater business. They are hurting their business. Here's what gets me. I guess you call it the tomato meter. Is that what it's called? Tomometer?
Yeah. I don't know if it's tomometer or tomato meter, but yeah, the kind of the rank, the percentage-wise of how many people liked the film, whether it was fresh or not.
People and theater critics. Yeah. They do separate those from the audience and that. I think the biggest complaint, and I'd like to know your thoughts on this. One thing about Rotten Tomatoes is that they just want to make one disclosure. They do not include us.
No, but they we're do not in, there yet.
But they do include a lot of people who are just online, who maybe are not professionals, and do this as a sidelight and may or may not be qualified as critics. So that's the biggest complaint the movie industry has. They amalgamate, I think it's about 3,000 different sites that measure whether a film is a good or a bad film. They say that these people who are making these judgments may or may not really be qualified as movie critics and know enough about the business to actually give a measurement that's worth anything. What are your thoughts on that?
I can see, because you know, you kind of scroll through those reviews when you want to. Do you ever really look at Rotten Tomatoes before you see something?
I've looked not before I see it.
Usually
afterwards. I use other measurements. There are other measurements that are just as good or better than the Rotten Tomatoes. But I do look at it after I've seen a film.
I would encourage people. So if you want to look to see whether to see a movie, don't look just at the percentage on Rotten Tomatoes. Click on the thing and scroll through and look at the reviews. But it'll be interesting because some of them, they'll say something and I'll see, well, what newspaper was that? And it's someone's local film blog in New Zealand. And it's like, well, okay, but I mean, that's not the same. Anyone, I guess anyone can be included in this site. Sometimes when it's the New York Times, the AV Club, Entertainment Weekly, something a little more prominent, I'll click and read the full review. And I think there's some problems there too, because a review, sometimes it's hard to say, did this review like it or not? Some people don't put star ratings.
Well, the New York Times will not do that.
Yeah.
You have to read the whole review and figure out what the reviewer thinks. And I think another complaint is that Rotten Tomatoes will take some of these reviews that are a little bit nuanced and just put a grade or good or bad.
They like it.
Put a good or bad on it. Yeah.
And that's kind of hard to do. I don't know. To some degree, I don't feel bad for the movie studios complaining. I'll tell you that, because really, you're going to complain because people said they didn't like your movie. Well, make better movies. And we've had film critics for decades. Yes, maybe we didn't have the online engine where we can look at 50 different reviews at once, but you had your local newspaper and you'd pick it up. And if the critics said they liked or didn't like a movie, that could have influenced someone's opinion. But I guess, you know, now they're able to see a bigger picture because it's all collected. Maybe back in the 70s, you'd have to really hunt down every newspaper to look at the reviews to see whether the reviews are good or bad on a movie. There's also more options, and I think that really is true. I think a lot of people are watching movies at home. They have better screens, and they'll wait for DVD. And these movies, okay, maybe you're not going to make as much at the domestic box office. The international box office has made a lot bigger chunk of how the movie industry is done, and all the other formats. You know, some of these Netflix or Amazon or Hulu will pay big money to have your movie as a part of its website. So there's so many other revenue streams, Redbox. People, I think, are actually more likely to rent a movie now because it's so easy. It used to be maybe back in 2002, someone would pirate a movie offline and they would download it. But now, if you're letting me download it for $3, you know, I'm just going to pay the $3. I'm not going to steal it. One, I don't want to get viruses on my computer. And two, it's such a low cost, I'll just go ahead and pay it. So I don't know. I think they have plenty of ways to make money, and I don't really need to keep complaining just because people aren't. And a lot of it, maybe the theaters are to blame too. We're going to be talking to the people at Flix Brewhouse. They provide an experience that makes me want to go to the theater. Some other movie theaters, I don't know. Do I want to pay $30 to get popcorn and two Cokes and sit in an uncomfortable seat with sticky floors and a children crying in the seat next to me when I can watch a movie at home? I don't know. They have to provide a good experience. So sometimes it's not just the films themselves.
But look at some of the films that did well. Let me back up to the review we just did. The Rotten Tomatoes grade on Kingsman was 50%.
That sounds right.
I think it's a little high, maybe a lot high, but about half of the critics thought it was worth watching. But if you take a look at the
Mother's 67%.
Is that so?
But some people say it's the worst film of the year.
Well, I guess if you're going to go see it, you're probably going to like it because you know what you're getting into. Would you put it that way, maybe?
I think it's a love it or hate it. I don't think there's anyone like lukewarm on that film.
But think about these films that did very well on Rotten Tomatoes. Wonder Woman did very well. Dunkirk, excellent film. Spider-Man Homecoming, all got great reviews from the two of us. And I would think anyone who would go see any of those films would have liked them, and they got great grades on Rotten Tomatoes. By the way, I was looking at the statistics. 3,000 critics worldwide. I'm not sure if everybody actually does a review of every film, but they use 3,000 people potentially on any film. But here's the thing about Rotten Tomatoes that really gets me. People think Rotten Tomatoes is this huge operation. Rotten Tomato employs 36 people, and they're in some very nondescript office building in Beverly Hills, California. And here's another part that gets me. Do you know who owns Fandango? Okay, I already gave it away.
Fandango.
Rotten Tomatoes is owned by Fandango. What's Fandango owned by? Movie studios. The movie studios own Rotten Tomatoes, and they're complaining about it. This, I just don't understand that logic at all. So anyway, I'm really with you, Adam. Don't complain about Rotten Tomatoes. Give us better films, and all will be well. You're going to lose money if you continue to put films out that people don't want to see. And you do Mummies and some of these other films that just crashed and burned. And Kingsman, unfortunately, was below what people wanted. So my message is leave Rotten Tomatoes alone. Try to make a better film. You can make some complaints, legitimate ones, about how Rotten Tomato does business, but it's around the edges. The main part of what they do is very valid.
I'll say one thing about It, which was a huge hit while I was gone. I think it's like 100, 200 million box office. Cost $35 million to make.
So that's a big profit. When you make it quickly, that's what they want to do. First weekend, first two or three weekends, if you can make the big money, that's the kind of film that the studio wants. They haven't had many of those this year.
And you don't need to spend a lot to make a good movie.
Exactly.
You have to just get a good director, a good story, and a creative vision. This idea, did you hear that Avatar, they're working on four sequels to it, over $1 billion production budget. Oh. Not even the marketing and everything else. For the production budget, I guess it's four movies, but still, $1 billion.
They had better draw an audience. That's all I can say. Or, you know, the CEO could be out, or they may end up being merged with another company. But these are the stakes. I think the studios put themselves in this position where they gamble all this money on these big budget films, and then if several of them fail, they just stop making those kind of films. And that hurts us all, but that's just my opinion. Anything you want to add before we go? We're going to head to our interview section here in just a moment.
No. Next week, I think we're going to review the new Blade Runner film, and I'm excited about that because it's from the director of Arrival, a film that I really enjoyed last year.
And there's a film out that I'm going to try to see other than Blade Runner. I'm going to try to see that this week as well. But Battle of the Sexes fascinates me.
Steve Carell and Emma Stone.
Yeah, I'm going to try to see that. I was around and when all that hype happened, when that match occurred, and knew the hoopla that was around it, but never knew the backstory. And I won't talk much about it now. It's been somewhat publicized, but Bobby Riggs had his problems behind the scenes, and his film does get into that.
I think this week I'm going to try to go see Stronger, the Jake Gyllenhaal film with the Boston Marathon survivor. So maybe we'll each have something else to talk about next week.
Well, we'll do what we can. We'll see what we can do. And Adam, thank you so much for joining us again. Always great to talk to you, and he'll be right back with our guests from the Flix Brewhouse here in Carmel. You're listening to Hamilton County Goes to the Movies. Our podcast originates from Donatello's Italian Restaurant, 9 West Main Street, in the Arts and Design District of downtown Carmel. Adam is back from his Italian honeymoon. Ask about his gelato when you come for dinner. If you enjoy our podcasts, spread the word. Send out links to social media so others may listen. You can hear Hamilton County Goes to the Movies on iTunes as well. Search using the phrase Podcasts by Larry Lannon, and then you can rate our podcast on iTunes. We would appreciate that if you would do so. Now, on to our guests this week, Ron Hahn and Victor Talavera.
Welcome back. We've got our guests today from Flix Brewhouse, Ron and Victor. Now, let me say, Flix Brewhouse is probably my favorite place anywhere to see a movie, and I'll probably go into a little bit more why here in the podcast. But the really cool thing to have them here, this is not your traditional movie theater. This isn't just showing, you know, movies and having your traditional popcorn and soda. This is a place where you can get really good food, and they do some really fun events, and they have a lot coming up in the month of October that they'll tell us about. Welcome, Ron and Victor, for being with us today.
Well, thank you very much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So I want to start off, October is kind of starting up. It's the month for kind of scary movies and horror films, and you guys have a pretty impressive lineup of films that are kind of favorites among people that they could go see. Many of us maybe saw them, you know, on VHS or DVD growing up, but the chance to kind of see some of those classics on a big screen should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's really what I like about the alternative content that we do is parents get to bring their kids to movies that that they weren't even around for when they came out, and that the parents get an opportunity to see it on the big screen in cases where they maybe didn't. But
now tell us about some of the films you have coming up in October.
Yeah, October, of course, we're going to go with some humor and some horror movies as well. So it's kind of an even split. I'll let Victor talk about the Monster Squad, because I'm going to be honest, I have not
seen
it. You've
seen it?
I have not seen
it. It's a cult classic. I personally don't know if it's a good movie, but a lot of people my age in the 30-ish range, we grew up liking it because it has the Wolfman, Dracula, Frankenstein, and the Mummy all together. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of that
the whole
dream
Universal
team. Yeah, but it's okay. It's got a lot of nostalgia to it.
Exactly. It's been a long time since I've seen the movie myself. I was a kid way back when I saw it as well. But I'd be interested to see that on the big screen. And that one's coming on the 3rd of October, so that's coming up pretty soon.
So that one's kind of kicking it off. You've got Young Frankenstein. Me and Larry have talked about that film numerous times, one of our favorites.
Classic.
Yeah. That is a classic comedy film. Maybe Mel Brooks' best. That and Blazing Saddles both kind of charted new territory for comedy. Any comments on that? None.
I can't believe it was 1974.
Doesn't seem like it was that long ago.
I don't feel young thinking about that.
And I've never seen Poltergeist. That's the next one you have coming up on October 10th.
You know, I heard stories of some very strange things happened on the set of Poltergeist.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
That there were some unexplained things. I'm not sure if that was just, you know, publicity agents' hype, but there are people on that set who swear that happened. So that may add to
that. And they were taking pictures, and you'd see people like in the curtains. And yeah, there was a lot going on there that I don't even think they knew about then. They just went through the archives.
They remade that film, didn't they?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was a remake. I don't recall what year that was.
And we don't remember it because it wasn't nearly as good.
No, it must, not, it must not have been.
Absolutely.
Like many cases.
And then Shaun of the Dead is one of you get the commemorative pint glass. Now, I went and saw E.T. At Flix, and I talked about it on the podcast because that was maybe my favorite film growing up. And I'd seen it re-released, I think, in 2002 when it maybe came back out for like the 20th anniversary.
Yeah, I played it on film then.
And then now it's the 35th. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that I was telling people about it, not only was it fun to see it again on the big screen, but the experience there, because you know, the bargain price that you guys get, I think it was like $10 or something for the ticket, and you got the pint glass. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would have paid that much for the pint glass alone, and
I think it was only seven.
You shouldn't tell
me. Yeah, I was going to say it was just seven.
We'll start charging more now.
Hey, it was a great deal. I just wanted to let people know that I think, you know, people think that going to the theater has to be a really expensive experience. And that's one thing I tell people about Flix Brewhouse is, you know, for what you can get for like a burger and a beer, you probably just get a giant tub of popcorn and a Coke somewhere else.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and that's basically what we aim for. Just the price points. The as you just pointed out, the cost of a movie ticket is the same anywhere else you go. Along with if you were planning on having dinner and drinks anywhere else, it's where our prices are comparable to that as well. So we actually benefit by having everything all in one. And the way I explain it to people, especially if you're going out on your traditional dinner date, you go out to dinner and then the movie. Well, in those situations, you have where you're on a time limit when you're out at dinner. It's like, oh, wait, the movie's about to start. Let's hope we've got to get going. So you're kind of in sort of a rush.
And of course, stressful.
Yeah.
Because you're like, am I going to get my check?
And then you also got to make sure you get your tickets and then if you're going to get good seats, so on and so forth. As opposed to where here, you just do everything all at once.
I love the reserve seats because sometimes my wife's very picky about where she sits in a theater, and otherwise we'd have to get there really early. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, sometimes with the opening night, you're never sure if you're going to get a good seat. Yeah. So we look and we'll see where the chart is, and especially I think next week we're going to try to see Blade Runner on the opening night, and you got two showings of that. Mm-hmm. So I'll try to find the
early buzz on that. Is it's incredible.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm pretty excited about it, and I rewatched the original recently, the final cut. Are you guys going to reshow the The original?
We might after close.
Yeah. The secrets are out now.
We have this DVD player that will play on a 50-foot screen. So,
do you still have problems with people trying to record these movies on their cell phones? Or in the old days, it was video cameras people would sneak in. Do you? I mean, I know that's illegal. I know you try to watch for it.
Oh,
is that really a problem
do,
in your business?
I mean, we haven't found anybody yet since this is open that has been trying to film. Sometimes people will take like a snapshot because they're trying to do their social media thing, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm. But if they've had enough.
It's a little more difficult to do it in a setting like ours because you have people constantly moving in and out, serving people, eating, and whatever. And so when people who are trying to bootleg these movies are
looking for... It'd be a horrible bootleg.
Exactly. granted, I've seen some of these bootlegs, and sometimes you'll see a shadow of someone walking across the screen or something like that.
Especially if they've had a couple of your beers there. They might be a little shaky on their Facebook camera.
Absolutely.
But actually, people don't talk as much at Flicks Brewhouse during the movie. I mean, you're ordering some food and maybe a quick comment to somebody, but one, you get food in your mouth, you can't talk. And two, I think because of the servers are coming and going, there's kind of like a little chaperone, like, I got to be quiet, which I appreciate because sometimes you go to a movie, and I hate to say it, especially a superhero movie, kind of right away when it first comes out where the masses come and see it, it's like you can't even hear the movie sometimes because everyone's talking. And then I'll start gravitating toward the weird artsy films, like when I went and saw Mother and I was the only person in the theater. But hey, I appreciated it. Because, you know, the talking during the movies really drives me nuts.
Yeah.
I want to ask about something because years ago I started going to this concept of a restaurant in the movie theater. Years ago, and to be quite honest with you, the food was pretty bad in those days. You guys have really brought that up to a different level. You really pay attention to the quality of the food, and you also brew your beer right there on the spot. So tell me about how I'll ask Victor to comment on this because you've been there from the start. How careful are you in trying to make sure you have the right quality of food prepared the right way when people see these movies?
Well, just like any restaurant that we go to, you know, there's the setup in the kitchen is just the same. You have your stations of grill and fry, and then you also have your expo line, which is basically the checkpoint where food is examined, make sure everything is looking right, everything's to order before it goes out. So the process in the back of the house or the heart of the house, as we call it, is fairly the same as you with any other restaurant. So on that aspect, we basically will, you know, the whole idea of having that cinema eatery dining experience is going to be the same no matter, you know, which Flicks we also go to.
Yeah, so, Adam, the next time you come in, I'll take you into our kitchen. It's what you think of when you see movies where someone's being chased through a hotel and then they go through the kitchen. That's what ours is like. It's a huge commercial kitchen. It's set up to serve 900 plates an hour, and we push it at that because with the 1,000 seats that we have, all of those are going to start in the evening between about 5:30 and 8:30 or 8 o'clock. All of those shows will be full.
So do you have a brewmaster on site, or
yes,
you have somebody who's in charge of getting the beer brewed?
Yep, we have a brewmaster, and then we have an assistant brewer, and then we have assistants from home office. But actually, our brewer is the one that's kind of setting up the new locations now too.
So
we're very fortunate.
You've done some special beers to tie into some films. I remember when I saw Batman versus Superman, there was, I think, like a key lime kryptonite or whatever it was. It was better
for
than the
Dark
movie.
Knight.
So the beer was better than the movie. That was my review.
What was the beer for Dark Knight, too? Because it was really good. Something with the Umbra.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
I think at that point we were using adjuncts of theater candy.
Yeah.
So it was Junior Mint. It was a Junior
That's
Mint
right.
Umbra.
Junior Mint Umbra.
That sounds pretty good.
It was
so
really
do you get to make those decisions at your location, or is that kind of something like...
That was something that Chris Knott, our brewer, came up with all those, yeah.
And then we actually implemented that in all locations, so we actually had the same thing down there.
Are you going to have a special Star Wars beer this December?
Oh, that's hard to say at this point, but I wouldn't doubt it.
We already have started a tradition of some really popular Star Wars beers. One is called Omnipresent, and the other one, you remember what the other one was called?
I don't
remember. Hail Scroob. Hail Scroob. There's a guest, I'm sure he lives here in Carmel, and every time he comes, he'll write something on his little pad, you know, that you write on to get additional orders. He'll put, Scroob has no season. And he'll make a little Darth Vader on it.
I had the Will the May the Schwartz Be With You. That was another one of your beers you had. Uh-huh.
Let me ask about your special movie offerings. I know you had a recent string of 80s films and so forth. Is that a corporate decision, or do you, Ron, have any say in that as to how you what kind of lineups you decide to use in your local theater?
Our marketing department takes care of that. Okay. Greg Johnson heads that up, and he's got a great mind for this, and he's also seen what's worked in different parts of the country. What we do is tailor it to that community. So there are movies that do really well here that don't do so well, say, in Des Moines, Iowa. We do really well with the family films. We do well with the Oscar dramas, those kind of things. And, you know, what would you say, Victor, Round Rock specializes in? Wrestling movies?
Wrestling movies. it's kind of hard to say in Round Rock. There's other companies down there that specialize more into those, so it's a little harder for us to kind of nail that down. But
there's a lot more competition.
Down there. But it tends to be fairly rounded. But obviously, there's certain movies that will always do well, like Princess Bride. Mm-hmm. Every time we show that, it's almost a sellout.
Three Amigos,
mm-hmm. or stuff like that. There's some cult classics that will always do well. And then every so often, kind of going touching back to what you were saying before about watching older movies on the screen, there was one time that we'll do a Saturday morning show sometimes for the kids, and there was one particular I remember where we did Wizard of Oz. And me personally, I've always seen Wizard of Oz on television. I've never seen it on the screen. And so this first time that we showed it, I walk into the theater and I'm kind of sitting on the sidelines there, and I'm kind of mesmerized just by watching the movie on the big screen. It's just a whole different experience. And so coincidentally, I look right around the corner and I see this father with his daughter sitting on his lap. Maybe she's about 3 or 4 years old, and she's just mesmerized, just fixated on the screen. And it was just like something I wish I could have taken a picture of. I'm just like, man, this is just like a classic Hallmark moment. But it goes to show you that some classics just don't die. And that experience being at the theater, it's not something you could duplicate at home. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that I've had even some of my friends comments, like, how is the home theater system, competing with, movie theaters and so on and so forth? And I explained it that way, that there's a certain atmosphere you get from being at the movies as opposed to being at home.
Yeah, the shared experience is... Mm-hmm.
Best example... why do people still go watch football games at the stadiums as opposed to just staying at home and watching them? There's something to gain from watching it at home, but there's a different experience you gain from actually being there. And the same thing with movies. The sound systems that they have set up, some of the digital projections that they're going through, the formats of the movies, all that stuff makes a big impact on that experience.
I'm going to ask you a question, Victor, and you can chime in too, Ron, but this is something that goes way back for me, because many years ago I worked in the radio business, and the radio station I worked for had a contract with a drive-in theater where we did like a live disc jockey show as people were arriving before the film started, so they could promote things. And the booth we used was right next to the projection booth. So I got to know all the projectionists. Man, this was back in the 1970s. Those guys were a different breed, and I loved every one of them. What's sad to me is, and it's technology, nothing you can do about it, that era is gone. You don't hire projectionists anymore, do you?
Absolutely not. And actually, it's kind of one of those things that's the industry has kind of shot themselves in the foot in that way, because before, as you just stated, there were people that were designated just for projectors and projection maintenance and running the film. There was a lot more process. Actually, my very first job ever was in a movie theater, and I was a projectionist. So I got to work with film. And, you know, it was a process. You had to build the movies. The movies would come in about 6 or 8 big metal cases, and you had to put them together. You had to make sure that nothing was turned backwards or upside down. And, you know, there was a reason why you had to preview the movies beforehand to make sure that everything was put together. Now, as you said, going into digital, there's not really a need for that. So at the point where Hollywood pushed for everything to go digital, it kind of pushed out all those projectionists. And the few that actually stuck around, you know, that accepted the new technology, start to learn more about it and whatnot, or actually have moved themselves up far in this industry with certain companies. But the concept of everything's digital, you don't need somebody there anymore, everything's automated, which is true. You know, all this stuff is automated. But as we know with technology, it works great when it works. But when it doesn't, you know, it's not so great.
Somebody has to be called.
Exactly. It still needs to be maintained.
Sure.
And so there is still a need for people like that to be able to go in. And in this industry now, there is a shortage of people that actually can work on these projectors because this concept of everything being digital was sold to all these companies saying, you don't even have to have this extra person anymore, whatnot. And so now when there are issues with these machines, there's a shortage of technicians that can go out and repair these things. So that's actually...
Our closest one is Cincinnati.
You never had to hire a projectionist, did you, Ron? Since you've only been in the business for a few years. Manager anyway.
I've been in the business since 99.
So you have dealt with the projections.
I opened the Cinema Grill.
Oh, okay.
And so I owned that for 12 and a half years. So I was like Victor. I used film and we built them. And yeah, it's crazy when the film comes in and all these different pieces, if they get put out of order, you know, every film is a Quentin Tarantino film.
I have to tell you a funny
story. Everything jumps around.
I'll turn it over to Adam, but one funny story. They're the same projectionist I got to know at this drive-in theater. One time, and he may have experienced this, the film cut was late coming in. And they actually, I guess the area manager was like, picked it up at the airport, was rushing to the scene, but it was still late. And the way this drive-in was set up, it wasn't part of the concession stand. It was like an old configuration. It was a separate building, his own separate building for the projectionist, and that's where they did all that. He had to put a Navy training film on for 15 minutes. He locked his door. There were people pounding on his door, yelling at him. And of course, he couldn't do anything about it. He was waiting for his film. But I thought, yeah, those days are long gone. Now that you got digital, and you don't have to ship this anymore. You just electronically pick it up through.
Correct.
Yeah, we do quite a bit of the time, and every so often you will get a hard drive shipped in, and then we ingest it into our server. But we get a lot of it.
For the most part nowadays, Hollywood's moving towards satellite, where everything just feeds down right into your server. And so that way there's obviously savings on shipping, and then you're also able to control what content goes where. So it's actually an added security on their side in order to make sure film is not being intercepted somewhere. You know.
Yeah, we have to have a key. So we might have the film in our server, but we aren't able to access it till usually like midnight a couple days before. And that gives us time to preview it once and make sure it's okay. But that's where you might run into a problem, though, is it's time to show the movie and the key doesn't work. It's a security code about, I don't know, 20 numbers or something.
So that's a way for hackers not to get into it. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I wanted to ask about your beer dinner you guys have coming up. Now, you guys have a great menu. I have noticed that a lot of times the popular items that people order will be things like pizza and burgers and, you know, kind of traditional fare. Not that you guys can't do fancier cuisine, but because that's what they feel like going to the movies. Mm-hmm. But with this beer dinner, this would be kind of an opportunity for you guys to showcase some kind of more upscale options and also to sample several of the beers that you guys have.
Correct. It does. It allows the our kitchen manager, Kurt Austin, and also Chris Knott, our brewer, to show their chops. And it's pretty impressive. We put the beer dinner on sale knowing that we were going to sell 48 tickets because that's how many portions of quail we had. And we wanted to keep it intimate, and we wanted it to be a special deal. You know, you really can't do this kind of a menu for the 270 people we fit in our largest theater. So we made it intimate. We put it in a still a bigger theater, though, so everybody has great seats. And so the other day, it was a couple days after it was on sale, somebody goes, "Oh my gosh, we've sold 46 tickets to the beer dinner." I'm like, "No, we didn't." I'm like, "Hang on a second, let me look at this." I said, "I got to shut this down." And you know, we'll figure out where we can sell those last two seats. But we have a couple that go beyond the loyalty program. We have a loyalty program where you can become a gold member, silver member, gold member, and I think they've become gold member like 10 times over, and I wanted to do something special for them. So I'm going to see if I can invite them to the dinner.
Now, the part that I love, yeah, that you're showing Caddyshack.
Yes.
So you have kind of some traditional nice cuisine like butternut squash bisque and quail, mm-hmm, but the dessert is really tied in with Caddyshack. You have, a deep fried Baby Ruth?
Yes.
So, and if you've seen that movie, that is very appropriate for Caddyshack.
And if you look at the beer, it's Umbra, or which is our chocolate, mm-hmm, stout with toasted walnuts. So I think that's kind of fitting too.
I just want to say that I live in Fishers, which is of course right next door to Carmel. We're, sure, about 90,000 population now. One thing that people don't know is that Fishers does not have a movie theater. We have one right across the street to the south, one very close, to a couple, three close on the north, and, of course, here in Carmel. We had a local attorney from Fishers who's a big movie buff, but he's also a property attorney, a commercial property attorney in Fishers. I see him quite often as I cover news there. And I talked to him about the fact that Fishers, first of all, doesn't have a movie theater, and secondly, there were rumors that a theater with York concept, I should say, mm-hmm, was going to go into this new place called The Yard, which is going to be a culinary development near IKEA, which is opening in a few days.
Yeah.
So I know you guys couldn't tell me anything if you knew anything, but be as specific as you can. Do you think that your company might have any eyes on a place like Fishers?
I can say pretty confidently that we don't as of right now, okay, just because of the size of our company. We are growing. In fact, we're going to double our size by the end of 2018. We only have four locations, and we have three locations that have broke ground right now and are going to be opening rather quickly, and it's going to keep this guy really busy. So I think before we start putting second locations in, we've got a footprint that we're looking at that kind of covers the southern part of the country, and then it kind of comes up through the Midwest and expands across the Midwest. So
Victor, what I'm hearing him say is that you're looking at going into more markets, not expanding in the markets you're in. Is that what I'm hearing him say?
That's correct. Yeah.
Now, you guys have a lot of family-friendly offerings, films that, mm-hmm, you can take your kids to see, but then you also have plenty of evenings where it's kind of adults only. Now, you cut it off for... they have to come under 21 at a certain hour, and then at some point, I think all movies, right, after a certain hour, you know, it's adults only.
I'll field that one. We've got the 17 to 20-year-olds that, mm-hmm, are usually kind of left out in these type of concepts. They're allowed to come on their own before 7 o'clock. In that age group, you know, I haven't had too many problems over the years, but you start getting into your 10, 11, and 12-year-olds, and where parents drop those younger kids off, they can get pretty loud, and it's a lot of why, you know, our age of people going to the movies kind of went down over the years, because they go and it's just flooded with junior high and high school kids being loud and pushing, and you know, it turned a lot of older audiences away. But you know, what we've done with it and putting some restrictions on the kids. Kids can still come after 7 as long as they're a certain age, and that age is 6. From 6 to 20, they have to be with a parent after 7 o'clock, and it has to be one of those G or PG movies. Or they can see PG-13 as well. But when parents are with their kids, they're typically much more well-behaved.
But then you have some offerings. Like, so on Halloween, you're going to be featuring Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah, and, always interactive, always entertaining.
Are you now, do you have to worry about people's dress? Are you going to have to, or hey, whatever goes, goes?
That night...
With most, I don't know if you've ever been to a Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I haven't. I've seen photos, but
they can get a little weird. But that's the whole point of it all.
I don't think my wardrobe would fit into that.
But you know, and actually, that's kind of one of the examples of some of the interactive films that we do. And we also during our 80s, we did 80s sing-alongs, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. We also do quote-alongs mm-hmm. with movies, where we encourage people to talk through the movie. You see a movie that you know all the lines to, and so we encourage people to come out and do those things. But yeah, Rocky Horror Picture Show, definitely one of those that we want people to come in and have a good time and enjoy. Obviously, there's going to be some limitations, you know, but we don't want.
Is this your guys' first time doing that, Rocky Horror? There, or you've been there before?
No.
What's usually the response? Is that one of your bigger sellers, I imagine?
Yeah. It's it turned out pretty well, and we did have a lot of folks in costume, but that's not the only movie people come out to in costume. Yeah. We played Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and we had a guy in full Tim, and then beside Tim was what was the other character? It was the knight who till recently said knee. So there was a knight and there was Tim, and so I said hi to both of them, and Tim says, hello. And then I realized Tim had a purse. For those of you that haven't seen Monty Python,
it's a great film.
It's a great film.
But it's not for everybody. My wife's one of her favorite films of all time, Monty Python. Yeah. I have a question for
Tim's
you.
Tim's a great wizard.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I want to ask you this, because you did mention that when these films come in, unless you have a problem with the key, you do have to watch it to make sure everything's intact and make sure everything's in good shape technically. Do sometimes you watch a film and think, wow, this is going to be a big hit, and do you watch another film and say, oh, this is going to be a problem? Can you tell right away?
I can honestly say yes. I can honestly say absolutely. There have been some, just because we advertise that we have, you know, the digital projectors, 4K, Atmos surround sound, so on and so forth, and what people don't understand, that's what we're capable of doing. Just like anything else, you're going to get display what you put into it. So based on the directors, they may have a choice in sound engineering, they may have a choice in even the type of film that they use. And so sometimes even you have this big 60-foot screen that's fully digital, 4K, you know, and high frame rate, all this other good stuff. But the film will come up and it'll look small, it'll look grainy, and that's kind of what they were looking for. Especially movies like that try to play off the whole documentary filming, kind of like footage. A Blair Witch project type thing. Mm-hmm. They purposely go with a grittier looking film to kind of give that illusion that it's a home camera as opposed to like a highly digital camera. So as I said, in some of those cases where you look at it and you question why the director would make these choices. Mm-hmm. Most recently...
Christopher Nolan.
I would say Christopher Nolan with Dunkirk. And then there was another movie that just before that.
Yeah, like 2 weeks before it, yeah.
Where the director... There's different formats of screens where you have one we call flat, which is more of a square shape, and then you have your scope, which is your wide screen. And it was Transformers.
Yeah,
that was Transformers. Was terrible at this. I don't know what Michael Bay was thinking on this, but
a lot of people didn't know what I was thinking on that.
So you know, typically Transformers is a widescreen movie. Well, this last one that came out was in a smaller screen. The reason being is because It was filmed for IMAX, and so they wanted to utilize the IMAX format. Well, obviously, unless you have an IMAX screen and capabilities, it's not going to be the same.
Which we do. It's not IMAX, but it's MX. Oh, okay. It's our own version.
But in the film, it switches formats constantly through the movie. Every few minutes or so, it switches from a wide screen to a small screen to a big screen, and it's just all over the place. And so Dunkirk, Christopher Nolan, I don't know if this is a new thing they're trying in Hollywood or what, but in Dunkirk as well, there's some format changes.
I heard a DJ on my way home talking about how the theater was having problems with their masking during Dunkirk, and in my mind I'm thinking that wasn't the theater.
Yeah.
That was Christopher Nolan.
So to kind of wrap up our segment, I'm a very frequent visitor of your business, so I wanted to give a few tips for people who haven't been to Flicks Brewhouse on how to have the best Flicks Brewhouse experience.
There you go.
And you guys can jump in with some advice that you have to people to maximize their experience. One, I would say I like to buy the tickets online ahead of time to pick my seat, especially if I know it's a popular movie, because, you know, tickets can go fast for some of these.
Yeah.
And, you know, yes, you can go to the box office and buy your ticket right there, but it's so much quicker and be able to see on the map and pick right there even a day or two ahead of time if you know it's like an opening night of something like the Blade Runner, which will be big.
Right. If you don't, you might end up in the front row, and the front row is never the best.
I know. It isn't. And you know what? But it isn't at any movie theater, really, be honest. I usually like the back two rows in your theaters. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you don't always want the back, but I think at Flicks Brewhouse, I think the back rows are really pretty good. Be careful, though. You might get one of the seats that don't have, like, the
tablet arm.
The tablet, yeah. And you kind of have that small little area, mm-hmm. which is fine, but just if that's going to be a problem for you, be sure you know before you get your seat there. Food recommendations. I like the quesadillas. I think those are really good. The burgers and pizzas are good. Appetizer-wise, those pretzels with that queso cheese dip, that is, I'm sure you sell a lot of that because that cheese sauce. And I will actually save the cheese sauce to dip my fries in it because the sauce is that good. The chicken wings, you know, mozzarella sticks, that's all really good too. If you're getting a beer, get the beers that you guys brew. Because I know a lot of places say, oh, we brew on site. Your beers are really good. The Luna Wit is excellent. The Umbra Chocolate Stout. I could probably go on. The Scottish 10-Day Scottish Ale is really good.
Hey, if Chris you're there during the week, you can actually see Chris and the other brewers actually working in the brewery. You know, it's all windows, so you can see them, see the tanks, see them actually working, see them making the beer.
Another tip for people, if you do go there, if you try to get in after the showing starts, they may not let you in. If you've already purchased your ticket, sometimes they'll let you sneak in because you've already purchased the ticket. But your registers won't let someone buy a ticket after the show has started. You actually have to have a manager come and override it, which you did for me once, which when I went and saw The Mummy, no one else was in the theater for good reason. That's it was a terrible film. But me re-reviewing it for the podcast, so you guys were like, you know what, let the guy in. You know, the film's not, he won't be bothering anyone else by coming in late.
If I can interject for just a moment there, one of the things we really, really do encourage is for people to show up 30 minutes before the show. Mm-hmm. We do have a pre-show that we put on 30 minutes prior to the show to
kind of scolding him?
Well, not exactly.
No, I come early because I like to get my order in so I can relax.
Absolutely, and that's the whole purpose of it. And then it's actually part of the whole experience. People have this idea, I've got my tickets reserved, I know where I'm seating, I gotta take my time to get there. Well, part of the experience is making sure that we're able to come in and introduce you to the experience, introduce any new beers we may have, the menu if you have any questions. So there's a lot of that interaction with the server that we want to make sure you have prior to the movie. It's kind of hard to do that while the movie's going or while the trailers are going and as the lights come down. And then, so that's the reason why we try to encourage people to come in 30 minutes before the show. Get your, look over the menu, taste some beers even. You know, if you're not sure about a beer, hey, how's this Umbra? Let me try this out. It gives you that time to experience those things prior to the show. And the whole goal is to have everything in front of you as the movie starts.
And as someone who is in the restaurant industry, I'm sure your chef appreciates not getting every single order at the same time. So.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's 270 seats in one theater, and that's just one out of eight. So, you know, we really encourage people to get into those big shows early because we don't want the food going into the movie, you know, interrupting people.
And I must say, the pre-shows are actually really good.
They're fun.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. And in some cases, I've had people comment the pre-show was better than the movie, you know. So they tend to be very entertaining, and it's just one of those
things. For anyone that hasn't been, say you go see Star Wars, they'll have maybe bad lip reading from one of the Star Wars movies.
Which are hilarious.
Or they'll have some cartoon from the old 70s Star Wars cartoons, or they'll have some parody from Robot Chicken or something. Yeah. And then if the movie doesn't have that much, I've seen some where it was like, all right, here's them on Jimmy Fallon, one of the people that were in the movie or something like that. But it's always something that's entertaining. Mm-hmm.
Just for the sake of your servers, I assume they do accept tips, correct?
They do. They graciously accept it.
So if you do, don't forget to tip the server. I want to thank Victor Talavero. You are, tell me again where you're from?
Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas, which is the home office, correct?
Correct.
And Ron Hahn, who is the manager here at Flix Brewhouse in Carmel. I learned a lot, and I hope all of you did. And thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In this week's film review, Adam wasn't that enamored with Kingsman, The Golden Circle. I gave it a D+ only because of the acting performances and original staging of some fight scenes. We both agreed the story was not strong here. A comic book story for a feature film. Adam and I thank Ron Hahn and Victor Talavera for talking about the Flix Brewhouse movie experience. Find out more about Flix Brewhouse at flixbrewhouse.com/Carmel. If you enjoy our podcast, spread the word. Tell your friends. Send out links everywhere on social media. In the meantime, Adam and I will return next week with Hamilton County Goes to the Movies.